What if everything you thought you knew about modern politics was actually the final chapter of a spy novel written decades ago? Throughout the 1970s and 80s, while Americans were watching Rocky defeat Ivan Drago on screen, Soviet intelligence was quietly cultivating something far more valuable than any fictional propaganda victory. A real American businessman whose vanity, greed, and desperate hunger for validation made him the perfect long-term asset. This wasn't a thriller plot. This was patience elevated to an art form, a decades-long operation so audacious that when it finally succeeded, even seasoned intelligence officers struggled to believe it had actually worked. The story begins at Joy Ludd, a Fifth Avenue electronics shop owned by Soviet emigres. In the late 1970s, Donald Trump bought televisions there for his Grand Hyatt Hotel project. The store advertised, "We speak Russian," and catered to Soviet diplomats needing electronics compatible with USSR standards, devices they resold on the black market for huge profits. According to former KGB officer Yuri Shvets, Joy Ludd was a KGB operational base providing clean, surveillance-free equipment, while owner Semyon Kislin functioned as a spotter agent, identifying potential recruitment targets. When Kislin extended credit to Trump for roughly 200 televisions, he wasn't just making a sale, he was opening a file. This mundane transaction became the first documented contact between Trump and Soviet intelligence, a relationship that would span four decades. The KGB monitored Trump from 1977 after he married Ivana Zelnikova, a Czech national from a town with heavy STB presence. By the mid-1980s, KGB chairman Vladimir Kruchkov aggressively recruited American assets, and Trump possessed ideal qualities: narcissism, susceptibility to flattery, and insatiable greed. In 1984, mobster David Bogatin purchased five Trump Tower condos for $6 million cash, laundering Russian mafia money through Trump's properties. A BuzzFeed investigation later found over 1,300 Trump-branded condos sold in secretive all-cash transactions totaling $1.5 billion, with significant Russian participation. Trump then inexplicably presented himself as a nuclear weapons expert, creating the perfect opening. In January 1987, Soviet Ambassador Yuri Dubine invited Trump to Moscow to discuss a joint hotel venture, an invitation written at KGB General Ivan Gromykov's behest. Trump arrived on July 4, 1987, staying at the National Hotel under constant surveillance. The bait was real estate, the hook was ego. After Moscow, Trump manipulated the New York Times into falsely reporting he'd met Gorbachev, gaining validation as a world leader. The payoff? Trump spent $100,000 on full-page ads advocating America abandon defense commitments to Japan and the Persian Gulf, positions perfectly aligned with Soviet active measures to undermine U.S. foreign policy. The KGB considered these ads among their most successful operations. They'd manipulated an American into attacking foundational elements of American strategy using Soviet talking points, and he'd paid for it himself. Trump's subsequent hostility toward Gorbachev, widely admired in the West but loathed by hardline KGB operatives, suggested he was taking cues from Soviet intelligence. In a 1989 Playboy interview, Trump predicted Gorbachev would be overthrown, a prediction Shvets noted only someone with KGB inside knowledge could make. When Trump won in 2016, a suspiciously timed article appeared in a Moscow newspaper featuring Natalia Dubinina claiming she'd spontaneously met Trump in 1986. Shvets identified this as an active measure to conceal Trump's true KGB contacts. The timing, exactly 9 hours and 20 minutes after Trump's victory, sent a clear message. It was a hello from Russian intelligence to their man at the White House. While Russia cultivated Trump, William Barr built a shield against accountability. Raised by a strict Republican father, Barr embraced zealous Catholicism and worked to expand presidential power throughout his career. After helping CIA Director George H.W. Bush evade congressional investigators in 1976, he built a network of ultra-conservative Catholic attorneys connected to Opus Dei, a controversial organization promoting values that served autocratic leadership. As Attorney General under Bush, Barr earned the nickname Cover-Up General for shielding the executive branch in Iran-Contra and other scandals. Returning as Trump's Attorney General in 2019, he assembled a Praetorian Guard, including Pat Cipollone, Leonard Leo, and Brett Kavanaugh. Despite the Mueller report documenting at least 10 episodes of potential obstruction, including Trump's panicked reaction to Mueller's appointment, "This is the end of my presidency. I'm fucked," Barr's presentation was a masterpiece of disinformation. He claimed the accusations against Trump were false when Mueller had actually stated there was insufficient evidence to charge a broader conspiracy. This network enabled Trump to systematically dismantle checks on presidential power.
Epstein's rise from college dropout to purported billionaire puzzled Wall Street insiders who couldn't identify his actual business activities. His Trump connection dated to the early 1990s. At a 1992 Mar-a-Lago party, organizer George Aurney discovered only Trump and Epstein among 28 young women. When Aurney warned Trump about Epstein going after younger girls, Trump ignored him. The operation had Russian intelligence connections through Peter Listerin, a notorious matchmaker who procured girls for oligarchs and allegedly developed a model espionage system where girls would be photographed in compromising positions, ultimately becoming an FSB agent whose boss was Putin. Detective Joseph Recare identified at least 35 underage victims and allegedly gave former Deputy Sheriff John Mark Dugan boxes of DVDs labeled by dates spanning 1994 to 2005. After an FBI raid in March 2016, Dugan escaped to Russia, receiving political asylum. This surveillance operation created powerful kompromat, potentially controlling Wall Street power brokers, heads of state, and billionaires.
By 2020, Trump had fulfilled key Russian objectives. He systematically undermined NATO, questioning Article 5 commitments, and reportedly wanting to withdraw entirely. French President Macron called this the brain death of NATO. Trump's deference reached shocking levels when he ignored intelligence that Russia offered Taliban bounties to kill American troops, despite this appearing in his daily brief by February 2020. He even directed the CIA to share counterterrorism intelligence with Russia, despite warnings it would be one-sided. To prevent scrutiny, Trump dismantled oversight, firing FBI Director Comey, attacking investigators, and removing inspectors general. With Barr's help, he pardoned Stone, Flynn, and Manafort while promoting false narratives blaming Ukraine for election interference. The COVID-19 pandemic exposed dysfunction. Despite warnings and daily briefings since January 2020, Trump delegated responsibility to states instead of coordinating federal response. When George Floyd's murder ignited demonstrations, Trump spoke with Putin, then deployed federal agents in unmarked riot gear, drawing comparisons to Russia's little green men who invaded Ukraine. What began with a KGB-connected electronics store became history's most successful intelligence operation, exposing critical vulnerabilities, foreign money flowing through real estate, weak financial disclosure, and susceptibility to disinformation. Most disturbing was the network of enablers who protected this operation. The fundamental question remains: will we implement reforms to address these vulnerabilities or remain exposed to the next operation? In a world where patience is strategy and vanity is vulnerability, democratic complacency isn't measured in elections lost. It's measured in sovereignty surrendered, one flattering word at a time.